Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are and what time of the day you're listening to this episode of Talking the Blues. I sort of keep forgetting what date it is, so it's not the first one of the new year, but it feels like it. But then every day feels like a new year for Evertonians at the moment, because something happens seemingly every day. George and Andy, hello to you both.
Good day.
What's your baby?
We have actually been playing some football. Or we've been on the pitch at least. So I guess we need to talk about that a little bit. Although, for anybody that wasn't at Goodison yesterday, it's impossible really to talk about the game because for some bizarre reason, the game was not showed on television anywhere in the world, which is very odd.
No, despite a couple of American channels advertising that they were going to be showing it, the only game that was shown was Blackpool and Forest, Everton and Palace, and the other games that were played last night, none of them were shown.
I think they picked the better game, though, if they picked Blackpool and Forest.
Well, whether they picked the better game or not is irrelevant. The very fact is that, you know, the other games in the same competition were played on the night, and most other times, every game has got some form of coverage.
And that
wasn't. I mean, hopefully, most Evertonians or all Evertonians by now who weren't at Goodison will have seen the video of the goal that Andre Gomez scored to put us into the next round. But it was odd, to say the least, that an FA Cup tie involving two Premier League sides got absolutely no TV coverage whatsoever.
Yep.
Very.
Hey, what a fantastic goal.
Great free kick. Great free kick. Very pleased, you know, obviously pleased for the fact that it put us soon to the next round. Pleased for Gomez, because obviously he's one of those players who's kind of been on the fringe of things, and a lot of people have said the sooner we get rid of him, the better, and other people say, no, he's still got stuff to offer, and I think that kind of helped his corner last night with that free kick. I mean, I've seen it from two different angles. I've seen a video from it taken from the park end, from right behind it. Just super, super, super free kick. Delighted for him, delighted for the team, delighted for all the players. From all accounts, Jal Virginia looked absolutely solid in goal again last night, so that's really good news for him and the club. From the commentary I listened to, the centre-back pairing of Tarkowski and Branthwaite had another good outing. It's unfortunately, it's just that lack of quality through field and finishing that stopped us winning by more from against what appeared to be a rather drab Crystal Palace side. And I actually felt sorry for Roy Hodgson last night, because he's been getting a lot of pressure recently, apparently, from Palace fans. And when he made the triple substitution that saw him take Eze off, you could hear the Palace fans that were at Goodison in the background chanting, "You don't know what you're doing." And I found myself thinking, hang on a minute, this guy's been involved in football for probably more years than most of those fans have lived. probably a bit cruel to say you don't know what you're doing when he's been around the game for so long and been successful. And, you know, and in different spheres of the game as well. He's, you know, he's coached abroad, he's coached here, he's coached in the national side. You know, this guy's got a wealth of knowledge. And I found myself feeling really sorry for Roy Hodgson last night. I wasn't sorry that we knocked him out of the cup, don't get me wrong. I just thought, on a personal note, I thought it was a bit poor from those Palace fans who'd made the trip up to chant that a manager who kept them up last season and has never really let them down. But that's their problem, I guess, and I guess it's his problem with them.
Actually, you raise an interesting point, Andy. I'm not sure, I don't think it was on this podcast and I can't even recall who exactly I was speaking to about it, but we were talking about how expectation of fans can change. And when you think about Crystal Palace, who are now an established Premier League club, possibly even more established than we are at this moment in time, they've come such a long way in, you know, relatively short period of time. And perhaps perhaps some fans just get ahead of themselves in terms of ambition.
I think all fans are guilty of that, aren't they? Because, I mean, we've only got to look at our own fan base. We're so fickle with players and managers. You know, we had four good results in December, and everyone was happy as Larry, you know, and Sean Dyche might not have been the new Messiah, but he was gaining favour with sections of the fan base who probably never thought they'd be Sean Dyche supporters, and players were playing well and coming into form. And then we have a couple of bad results, a couple of disappointing results, although the performances weren't bad, like Spurs away, where we lost and we really could and probably should have won that game. And all of a sudden, that, you know, Dyche is, you know, about as useful as an ashtray on a motorbike, and players are getting slagged off again. And like I just said about Andre Gomez, you know, we all know that Gomez hasn't got the pace ideally to play it week in, week out at Premier League level. But the guy's got skill in his feet and he can pick a pass, and, you know, and his free kick last night proved that, you know, he can take dead ball situations as well. But, you know, he's only got to miss one tackle and people slate him again. And I think it's not just us, it's fans of all clubs have just become intolerant of mistakes and human error. I mean, we're absolutely dead right to be intolerant of errors with VAR, but we're becoming intolerant far too quickly of our own players and players in general. And I just think that it spoils the spectacle. When you're in the ground now, you know, everyone's geared up for 3 o'clock and kickoff and ready to go. And then the first misplaced pass, and people are getting harangued from the stands straight away. And you think, dear God, give the guy a break. You know, I mean, there was that, you know, it brings me back to, was it the cup semi-final at Wembley where the players were coming off at half-time and there was some booing from the Everton fans, and Ross Barkley was thinking it was all at him, and it was aimed at Roberto Martinez on the day, if memory serves me correctly. But Barkley was taking it all to heart, and Jags was telling him, no, it's not aimed at you. I don't know, maybe, I mean, we've said, you know, the game is too much based on money and this, but the need to win and survive and try and improve, it just seems to me to be putting so much pressure on players, and they're getting it from every direction within the stadiums, wherever they're playing, whether they're at home, whether they're away, or wherever. There's always hypercritical people having a go at them. And, I'm as guilty of it as anybody. Don't get me wrong. I'm not making myself out to be a plaster cast thing. If, you know, if something goes wrong, I get annoyed about it. But sometimes the venom which is heaped at players and managers from fans in the stands. And like I said, last night just kind of summed it up for me. You know, Hodgson served every club he's managed, he's served with honour and dignity. And to hear someone of his stature within the game being told that he doesn't know what he's doing by, you know, 500-600, however many Palace fans were there last night, none of them have probably kicked a ball in professional football themselves, and probably gave up playing football, you know, when they left school. I don't know. It's just, just didn't sit right with me that last night. I found that very disappointing.
I think that's a fair comment. Look, one of the really interesting things about Roy Hodgson, of course, is that he looks a bit like, you know, like a favourite elderly uncle or a grandparent, yeah, perhaps. But he's got one of the fiercest tempers in football.
Has he really?
Oh yeah, yeah. If he goes off the deep end, poof, you want to keep clear.
Well, without wishing it on him before he wants to, I can't wait for him to retire and publish his memoirs then.
No, his I mean, not. I don't think he does the hairdryer treatment, sort of a la Sir Alex Ferguson.
Right.
But he's got a legendary temper.
All right.
And apparently, without sort of casting too many aspersions against his character, he doesn't forget easily neither.
Right.
Apart from that, he's a great guy. I have to say, I know my kids met him once, and or I was with my kids when we met him once, and he was absolutely fantastic with the kids. He ignored me, which is fine, but my kids were quite young at the time, and he was great with them, lovely. So, but you're right. I mean, I think we all have too high level of expectation of our clubs. Talking of which, what level of expectation do we currently have about Everton?
Tell us, Paul, what on earth is going on?
Well, I don't know, really, to be honest with you. It's been quite a week, hasn't it? I've been a strong advocate of, I was a strong advocate earlier in the week, and I stood my ground, and to a degree still do, about Everton's position with regards to the commission and with regards to this new charge that's come along. Because I don't quite understand it, based on the information that I've received previously and the information that I've seen. The raw data that's actually being used, not only by the club, but being used by representatives of the club when talking to potential investors and potential lenders, all of which suggested that we were not going to be in a position where we were charged a second time. And of course, being charged a second time when two of the 3 years we've already been charged for throws up a whole load of questions in itself, doesn't it? I said to somebody earlier today, I get the idea, the original idea behind profitability and sustainability. And I think there are some benefits to it which we've sort of forgotten about, because had it not been for profitability and sustainability, had there been unlimited spending allowed by Manchester City and Chelsea previously, and perhaps others, Newcastle United, you know, with their owners, the game would be far less equitable than it is today. I mean, it's not very equitable now, but it would have been far less equitable. So the gap between those that had unlimited funds and those that didn't would be even bigger today. And in fact, I think if the Premier League had not had profitability and sustainability rules, we being the Premier League, would have attracted more state funds. So we would have ended up with, you know, not just the Saudis, not just Manchester City's owners, but we would have ended up with other clubs being owned by state entities, which would have just skewed the game even further towards those people. So in a sense...
And do you think that's not going to happen?
Well, I think the fact that, as is now the case with Newcastle, it demonstrates that it doesn't really matter how much money you've got beyond a certain amount. You're just not allowed to spend it. And in a sense, Everton... have fallen foul of this, haven't we? If you ignore for a second how badly we spent the money, we had to stop spending the money because the regulations wouldn't allow us to spend any more money. And that's when people start talking about, we've done nothing in the transfer window for years. We've had to sell our best players, regardless of the fact that we've lost lots of money from operations. I get all the negatives about it, but I do see one positive, and that is that it stopped the Manchester Cities and Chelseas of this world, and possibly even Liverpool, for example, and certainly Newcastle United now, from getting even further ahead of everybody than they would have done.
Are you not being a little presumptuous there, Paul, that the punishment that was assessed on Everton the first time is likely to be replicated or similar for each indiscretion of clubs in the future?
I think that was like my opening gambit. It wasn't certainly wasn't me like saying that profitability and sustainability overall is a good thing. I was just trying to bring some balance and say it's not, hasn't been an altogether bad thing on balance. And certainly looking at it now from an Evertonian's perspective, it's been less good than it has. It's been more bad than it's been good.
Yeah.
So the overall impact, certainly on Everton, is negative. And of course, one of the big problems that Everton are going to have moving forwards is that, having been caught foul of the rules once, and those rules apply to 3 years of expenditure, and then being caught foul of the, possibly foul of the rules for a second year, two of those 3 years are the same 2 years as where we were found foul of in the first charge, if I'm saying this clearly enough.
So in effect, we're being charged for the same offence, or accused of the same offence twice.
Well, that's the implication, isn't it? Now, so ask yourself why the rules were put over 3 years in the first instance. The rules were put over 3 years in the first instance to stop just 1 year of excessive expenditure getting you into the problems that Everton have got based on 3 years. So there was a good reason to begin with for having it for 3 years. Mm-hmm. But what nobody realized was, if you had it for like a rolling 3 year period and somebody was in breach of the rules, because nobody ever expected any club to lose 105 million after allowances over a 3 year period. But having done so, and having had it over a 3 year period, nobody ever expected the fact that then in the second year, if you're charged again for the second year, two of the 3 years that you've already been charged for appear in the second charge. And God forbid, I don't think it would be the case, but if Everton were to be charged for another year, the effect is just compounded. Yeah. And in law and in sort of natural justice, it just doesn't seem right that you can be charged, and if found guilty, penalised twice for something that's you've already been penalised for.
Well, is that what double jeopardy means?
Yeah. That's effectively what double jeopardy means. Yeah.
The other thing as well is, I mean, we got charged the first time, and we were assessed to be guilty, and they imposed a sporting sanction for a financial misdemeanor, and the club have appealed that, and that appeal is still ongoing.
Yeah.
And I just struggle to get my head around the fact that we've now got a second charge for the same offence when the first offence is under appeal.
Yeah, it is entirely prejudicial to charge for a second offence where two of the 3 years that have caused the offence are currently under appeal.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what happens. Well, it does matter what happens in the appeal. But in terms of, again, in terms of justice and in terms of not being prejudicial, it doesn't matter now whether Everton are found guilty or not guilty in the appeal. It has an impact on the fact that we were charged, has an impact on the second charge. It must do. And the fact that in the first instance we've been found guilty and had the penalty that we've received, how can they possibly say that that hasn't influenced what happens in, with the second charge?
Absolutely.
It must do. And then to be in a situation whereby, because it has to be seen to this year by, because of the change in rules, we have a situation whereby the appeal is now prejudiced, and whatever happens in the appeal prejudices the second charge.
Jesus.
All of which just makes a mockery of the laws of natural justice.
Mm.
Now, I don't subscribe personally to the conspiracy theory, because I think the net effect of all of this, even if the impact is felt most heavily by Everton, and actually by Evertonians, possibly even more than the club itself, there is an enormous effect on the whole of the Premier League, given that we are supposed to be the best league in the world, the best run league in the world, and you know, the most financially advantaged league in the world. How can it possibly be the case that one of only six clubs that have been ever present in that league with all of those financial advantages find themselves in a position where they're charged in two successive years for, the most, what's the word I'm looking for, onerous of charges that can be brought in the game as the rules are currently written? It just seems that when these rules were written and they've been subsequently adapted over the years, this has just never been thought through properly. And sadly, as much as how Everton have behaved, I don't think we can excuse how Everton have behaved and how badly the club has been run. Very few Evertonians would deny that. And this is evidence of the Premier League being run almost in the same manner, in the sense that the people who are running the Premier League, the people who are putting the rules in place and then applying the rules and then reaching these types of decisions, in many senses, they're no better than the people who have been running Everton.
Mm.
And the big danger here is that a bad set of rules is badly applied. Bad justice occurs, a bad penalty is given, and Everton are obviously the biggest damage applied to them because of this, but the whole game itself is damaged, and it all comes back to this idea about, you know, are these people who are both regulators, administrators, promoters, but ultimately, custodians of the game, are they actually doing what the game requires?
Are you talking about officials? Because as far as I've always understood it, the Premier League is run by the members of the Premier League, the 20 clubs.
It is. They're the shareholders. But day to day, and in terms of what the rule book says and everything else, that's the responsibility of a small number of people who are the board members of the Premier League. And okay, all of those people are put there and are chosen by the member clubs, although some clubs have more influence than others, because as was the case with Richard Masters, Richard Masters met both Liverpool and Manchester United before he was appointed to the role of CEO.
Oh, really?
Yeah. on an individual basis. And let's not forget also that Richard Masters was the fourth choice of CEO. The three people who were chosen before him, when the post was open, all declined the role. So the people that the Premier League first wanted, the first three people that the Premier League wanted, each of those three turned down the role. Richard Masters, being the fourth choice, was the one who said yes, he would take the role.
Do we know why those three people said, I don't want anything to do with this?
I think because they saw this as a poison chalice. They probably foresaw the difficulties that the Premier League was getting itself into at some point in the future, that it was a badly governed organization, badly constructed, badly regulated, and with bad regulations. I think anybody, you know, people at the very top of any industry, they make the choices as against their employers making the choices. They choose whether they want to join a place or not. And I think upon reflection, the very, very best people looked at the Premier League and said, actually, this is more trouble than it is worth.
Right.
Whereas Richard Masters took the role willingly. And I think that says quite a bit about Richard Masters.
And he took it having had meetings with Liverpool and Man U.
Yeah. And one might argue that they had undue influence, or one may surmise that they had undue influence over the appointment.
Why are we not surprised by that?
Well, it all comes back to the poor governance. Mm. You know, the comments that he made, was it yesterday? You know, it seems like much longer than yesterday.
Tuesday, wasn't it?
Tuesday. Okay, so 2 days ago, with regards to, it doesn't matter who they were, but just the very fact that the vocabulary that he used, small clubs, tells you everything that you need to know about an organization that should be an organization of equals, but quite clearly isn't. So that by definition, there must be big clubs if there are small clubs. And what does that mean? Well, it means that those clubs have more influence.
Mm. Yeah.
So again, it points to bad governance, bad leadership, you know, bad direction. It points to an organization that's no longer fit for purpose. And the problem that Everton have, compounded with all of its other problems, is that, you know, in a sense, we're in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, that feels like it.
Yeah, and that's not to pardon anybody at Everton for putting us in that place, because the question should always be asked, well, why indeed are Everton that club? Why is it us that are in the wrong place at the wrong time? Why have we allowed ourselves to be vulnerable?
Because we've been incredibly badly run.
Correct.
Yeah. By a bunch of shysters for quite some time. And we mustn't run away from that and go, ooh, it's a conspiracy. Ooh, people have been talking to Man United. That means that they must be out to get us. We're reaping what we've sowed here. Now, it does begin to feel like we're down, so kick them. But, you know, that's just paranoia, and who knows. Whilst all this is going on, Paul, I would be correct in thinking, wouldn't I, that 777, who the are they going to buy Everton is further away than ever, are still keeping us going with injections of cash. Is this correct?
Yeah, because they're the only people at this moment in time who are prepared to back Everton financially. And without their financial support, and we can talk about where that financial support comes from in a minute if you'd like to do so. Without that financial support, Everton Football Club would probably be in administration, or if not in administration, we would have been in a situation where we had to sell players in order to survive.
And a whole pile of the 777 people were at the match through the night, weren't they?
There were apparently there were five people there. Josh
having
Wander,
done a photo op at Bramley Moor during the day.
Yeah, which seems to me like a massive PR exercise, based on the comments that Richard Masters has said the day before, but also based on the overwhelming body of evidence is now across media from all different parts of the world, representing different industries, who are just pointing out the blindingly obvious that these people are hopeless at running businesses. That they either don't have the cash or they don't have the skills to run their businesses, not even successfully, but just competently.
But at the same time, the Premier League are looking at one of their founder members going bust.
I mean,
are the Premier League kind of caught in a cleft stick here, where they know perfectly well, because they've taken so long to decide whether these people are fit and proper people to own the football club? They know full well they're not. Everybody's telling them it's not. But if they don't, and we don't fudge it somehow, Everton go out of business, and then what does the Premier League look like? It begins to feel a bit Faustian, and, you know, you can't win. I can't find the right image, but
no, I know exactly. Sorry, I know I'm talking a lot here, but I know exactly what you're saying. But it is not the Premier League's role to protect Everton from itself.
No, but it is the Premier League's role to not wish to have a PR disaster on its hands.
Well, I think that I seriously would consider that the bigger PR disaster would be to let 777 through the door. And what might happen to Everton in the very near future without 777 would happen at some point in the future with 777. And that's the call that they've got to make at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely, Paul, absolutely. And because you're so much more informed than most people, it seems to me, are we going to get to the end of the season?
This sounds like the $64,000 question.
I must say, Paul, having known you all these years, when there's a big silence, me and Andy go, "Uh-oh."
I'm just thinking. I'm just trying to think how to say it. Ridiculous as it sounds, that there is a possibility that we might not make it to the end of the season.
Right. We just stop trading.
Well, yeah, and I've got a 90% written document sitting on my laptop that asks the question of Everton's directors: at what point do you have to face the reality, or even the possibility, probability, that Everton Football Club are no longer trading as a solvent entity? Richard Masters yesterday said that at best the takeover was weeks away, which takes us well into February, given that we're in the middle of January now. 777 have said that there's funding available till the end of January, but not made any commitment beyond that. And in the absence...
Why should they? If you were in their position, you'd go, right, piss or get off the pot, will you? Either give us a gig,
yes,
or we're pulling the money.
Except they desperately, this is like an onion, there's like a whole layer over and above their acquiring Everton. Why are they so desperate to acquire Everton Football Club? The only reason they want to acquire Everton Football Club is that their multi-club operation which currently has no value at all, because most of the clubs within it are losing money. and are stuffed full of debt.
Well, that sounds like Everton.
Well, yes, except one big factor.
They want a full house.
None of those none of those clubs are Premier League clubs.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you look at the valuations of football clubs around the world, Premier League football clubs are worth far more than any other football club because
that's obviously why they want it. I understand that.
Yeah. So having Everton in their portfolio of football clubs, I believe, would allow them to go out and raise more money than they have to spend in acquiring Everton. Bizarre right. as that sounds. The uplift in value to the 777 portfolio of football clubs is greater mm-hmm. than the cost of buying Everton, and therefore it allows them to borrow more money from whatever sources they have on the back of buying Everton. Because if they don't buy Everton, frankly, their multi-club portfolio has no value at all.
Mm.
And that business already has substantial debts, both at the top level within the partnership and also at individual club levels. Buying Everton allows them to renegotiate, resubstantiate debt elsewhere. That's why they're so desperate to acquire Everton.
Yeah,
but surely, Paul, that is solely dependent on Everton remaining in the Premier League.
Yeah.
So, in the event that the appeal against the 10 points who've already been deducted is upheld, is squashed, and were we to be assessed a further points deduction on the back of the second charge, let's just say for argument's sake that we're found guilty on the second charge and we get assessed a further 10 points, then the distinct likelihood is that despite the best efforts of every single player and Sean Dyche and his coaching crew, we would be almost certain to take the drop.
Absolutely, Andy. Let me put this to you. At the start of this conversation, I said that the information I've been given, and I know that other people had been given, suggested that we wouldn't be guilty of the second charge and that we probably were not guilty of the first charge, and that we may be successful in overturning the first charge in the appeal. What is there to suggest that 777 did not have the same opinion? So they may have felt that there was a good prospect of us not having the 10-point penalty in the first instance, but almost zero prospect of us having a second charge applied to us in the same way that I very publicly said that. And, you know, has since been proven wrong. This may actually be, and I don't know, this is just conjecture on my part. This actually may be a reason for them not to acquire Everton, notwithstanding what I've just said about the value of Everton to them.
Yeah.
This may end up being something that, you know, becomes too big for them to bite.
Mm.
Now, a lot of people will say, well, that's clearly not the case because they were there yesterday. They went to Bramley Moor and they were at the game last night. There were five people there, including Josh Wander, the Don Dransfield, Johannes Spur, who's the director of football, and a couple of other people. But I think that was a PR exercise. I think they had to be there given all of the publicity about what's happening elsewhere in the businesses, and given what Richard Masters said. Now, people say that Richard Masters and the Premier League are, you know, not pro-Everton, which I think is a fair point to make. It didn't seem to me that Richard Masters was very pro-777 when he spoke on Tuesday.
Right.
He's probably not a man who is able to choose his words very well. But I think most CEOs might have been able to handle the question, what's happening with the Everton takeover, in a better manner than he did. Had it been his desire to see the takeover take place? I thought the way that he handled that was quite revealing. He certainly didn't do 777 any favours.
Dear me.
So that leaves us in a position whereby not only do we face potentially a second charge, well, we now do face a second charge, but potentially another points penalty, whether it's 10 points or whatever, who knows.
But before you say this, Paul, let's assume for a minute that the appeal against the first points deduction is upheld and either the points deduction is reduced or, preferably, the points deduction is completely overturned and the club has to pay a financial penalty for their financial...
Surely that's why they gave us the points penalty, because we haven't got any money. They know.
What I was coming to is that...
Sorry, Andy. Go on.
If the first points deduction is either reduced and or completely overturned, then the second offence or the second charge, if found guilty, how could they impose another points penalty when the first one has been either overturned or reduced?
Exactly, Andy. This is why I said earlier that. No matter what the decision of the first one is, it becomes prejudicial to the second, and the second is prejudicial to the first as well, because the second implies a guilt that's not been is still subject to appeal, and if something is subject to appeal, it means it's got a big asterisk next to it that says. Yeah. It's not yet being confirmed because the people involved have appealed. So the if the appeal succeeds, it blows the second, it pretty much blows the second charge out of the window, makes a mockery of the Premier League's position. If the appeal doesn't succeed, it becomes hugely prejudicial to what happens with the second charge, which again, puts the Premier League in a really difficult position, because I think any barrister worth his salt, his or her salt, would be able to make that very simple point that how can you expect this to be, it's not a trial, but let's use the word trial, how can one expect this to be a fair trial if there's already been a judgment made on two of the 3 years that this charge now applies to?
Can I ask a really daft question, because I'm a bit baffled? What is the difference between the first charge, the 10-point penalty one, and the second charge? What's the difference between them?
It's just a different set of 3 years. So the first charge is the 3 years up to June 2022, and the second charge relates to the 3 years up to June 2023.
So it relates to the last year. Is there going to be another one next year?
Well, some people were suggesting on social media and also on TalkSport this morning that in all likelihood, Everton are going to be in a similar position at the end of this financial year, which would be at the end of June 2024. I personally don't think that's the case, but nevertheless. That's what people are saying.
So people are suggesting that on the second charge and a potential third charge is in relation to financial misdemeanours.
Well, it's in relation to breaking the rule that says you can only lose £105 million over 3 years.
Okay, so given we've spent very, very little over the last couple of years, where are these alleged continued losses coming from?
Well, when you say we spent very little, it's true that we spent very little in terms of acquiring new players.
Yeah, on the team.
Yeah. Yeah. So in terms of transfer fees, absolutely the case that, you know, it's dried up to virtually zero in recent years. I don't have the figures in front of me, but everybody knows that that is the case. What hasn't changed much, though, is the level of wages that we pay.
They are going, yeah.
And hasn't and the level of costs applied to the business. What has increased, which is part of the problem, is as we've borrowed more money and interest rates have gone up, our interest costs have gone from 4 years ago less than £5 million a year to this year being over £30 million a year.
Right.
All of which the Premier League argue applies to these rules. So in theory, we could still lose enough, even though we've not spent that money in the transfer window. The transfer window is, the purchase of players is only one element of our total cost base.
Right, but basically the football side of the business is being punished because the business side of the business has struggled.
And that's, you know, without saying I told you so, that's what I've argued for years.
Yeah.
That if you don't get the business side of the business right, it puts pressure on the football side of the business, and then we've compounded it by not getting the football side right.
Yeah.
Because we've made really crap investment decisions in terms of players, really crap decisions in terms of managers, and we've had to pay managers off.
Yeah.
And the poor performance on the pitch means we've not qualified for Europe, and that where we've been budgeted to finish, let's say in the top eight, you know, last year we finished 16th, and there's a massive gap in our income as a result of that. So all of these things added together get you to a position whereby even if you've not spent a lot of money in the transfer window, you can still be in breach of the regulations, which,
right,
you know, certainly is the case currently for Everton and may be the case for Everton this year. I personally don't think it will be, but, you know, there are a couple of people out there, one of whom is an industry guy, who are saying he thinks it is the case.
Flipping out.
Who's the next match against?
Luton in the cup.
Oh, really?
Is that the 27th?
On the 27th, and then Fulham away.
Right.
Because we're in the middle of this so-called winter break, aren't we?
After we've played 84 matches in December.
Feels like that.
I'm a bit lost for words. I'm really grateful for what you've said, because from the point where I got a text from somebody going, "We're going to be charged again," I thought it was a joke. I thought, no, don't be silly. You can't do that. We've already lost 10 points. While City are doing what the hell they like. So I'm really grateful that you've explained it. And now I'm just going to go and cut my throat. See you, boys.
Please don't, George. We might need you next week.
Yeah, get your boots out.
And there's plenty more that we could talk about, although I'm not going to now, with regards to, you know, the difficulties that the club faces.
Go on, give us 5 minutes of that.
Well, I'll give you 2 minutes of it. I mean, you know, at the end of the season, I think it's 9 or 10 players in the current squad are out of contract, which means that they can
walk away.
Well, they can either renegotiate a new contract, or they can walk away for nothing. And we've already got, like the thinnest squad imaginable.
Wow.
And we've still got to find funding for the rest of the stadium.
Yep.
Dear me.
And
is there any, you know, the proverbial tunnel that's not got a light at the end of it? Has somebody pinched the bulb and the wiring for our tunnel? Because there doesn't appear to be any. There doesn't appear to be any light at the end of the tunnel. The tunnel's just going on and on and on.
I think it was 777's job to put 50p in the meter.
All right.
Who've
they borrowed that off?
They clearly haven't got it yet.
Yeah.
No, sorry, I shouldn't say that.
I don't think you should, actually, since they're putting in £20 million a month in order to keep the lights on. I can't blame them for that. I mean, I think the image about the light at the end of the Everton tunnel is perfect, because it does feel as though it just gets darker and darker. And I think everybody who goes to Everton, everybody who tries to watch the match on the illegal stream, which wasn't even working last night, all the Evertonians, the Everton family, that's why there's such anger in the ground, Andy.
Yeah,
because everybody knows that they've been shafted. They've been shafted by a board that was useless, and now we're all paying the price.
Mm.
And because the game of football, from our point of view, is based on just simple hope, you know, one of the things I love most about going to watch football was that at 5-3, when the teams came out, everybody in the place, whoever the other team's supporters were, was all hoping for the same thing, just a good game of footy.
Yeah.
And because Everton are such a chaotic mess, and we're ashamed. I think the Everton supporters have every right to be ashamed. You know, I got a text today from Maguna going, what the F is going on with your, you know, to which I can't answer him. And I think that anger overspills into, you know, you so want the team to be able to do something it can't do, which is transcend what you've just said and what Paul's been saying, you know, is a farcical situation of a league that's run out of... It's just, you know, I mean, I thought when Mashiri arrived with Koeman and Ken Wright and all of them running around the sweet shop buying every jar they could. So we ended up with 6 jars of licorice, all sorts and nothing else. And it was just bonkers. I think the Premier League are doing that as well. There's all this handbag. And they haven't thought things through, clearly. And so the whole thing is just messed up. And I think... when football's, you know, we all understand football, like Cluffy always said, you don't need to explain it to people. They understand football. The frustration of Anana's first pass going awry is, you're right, it's more visceral now. And, while I'm on the subject, I do think that social media makes a big difference because everybody's got a pulpit now.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is here to stay. There's nothing much you can do about that, but for Evertonians, I have nothing but sympathy for all of us, because we're in the doo-doo.
Yeah, and one of the greatest and saddest of all ironies is that as a supporter base, I don't think any supporter base is worthy of such treatment, and you know there are obviously many examples of other clubs, other supporter bases, who've been treated far more badly than Evertonians. But in terms of, like, you know, Premier League clubs that should actually be very wealthy, should actually be have no problems at all given the resources available to them, the Everton supporter base is the least deserving of this type of behavior.
Mm.
Yeah.
And not just saying that because I'm an Evertonian, I'm saying that on the basis of the hundreds of football fans I know from different clubs in all different walks of life who just shake their head. Like your Arsenal friend, George, just shake their head at what's going on. They just don't, they might listen to this podcast, they might listen to the stuff that's written, they might read some of the stuff on social media, they might even listen to some of the professional media, and they just shake their head and think, how can in such a land of plenty, which is what the Premier League is, can a football club as storied and as historic as Everton Football Club end up in this position? Somebody said to me a couple of days ago, you've gone from being the Bank of England club to the Bank of Zimbabwe club.
Well, we you know,
with the greatest of respect to the Zimbabweans.
I mean, you could write the history of it and it wouldn't make very pleasant reading. You know, the only, like Andy said, you know, the only question here is, where's the light at the end of the tunnel? The only one that I can see, and I saw him talking about it the other day in a fascinating interview, was Deitch, who may not be Pep Guardiola or Carlo Ancelotti, but I'm not sure I wouldn't send him out to bat for me in the direst emergency. This is some straight-talking dude. And I think I feel privileged as an Evertonian to have him as manager at the minute. And I don't always agree with him, and I wish he'd play two up front, But as a man, he has my respect.
Yeah, I agree with that, Bill.
He's the Brian Clough of football managers.
Just stands there and takes it on the chin, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And he just, you know, he was talking about the financial mess and, you know, he was just so clear about it. There's, you know, it's just like, he's a bloke.
Yeah.
I've got plenty of time for him.
And he has a clarity, whether you like it or not, he has a clarity to his thinking and he's able to articulate it in very simple
and
terms.
Very realistic. He knows exactly what he's, where he is and what he's got to do. And, you know, he represents the only little funnel of light that I can see, is that if the team play as he wants them to play, we can give anybody a game as long as we can hold the money together to keep functioning.
Well, if he ever wants to give up managing football clubs, he can always join us on Talking the Blues.
Yeah. That would be good.
No, I mean on a permanent basis. I don't just mean as a guest. Bring a fresh dynamic to the game.
What?
Say again.
No, I'm not going to repeat that, Andy. Wasn't that funny?
Oh, okay.
All right, gents. I'm going to call time. I'm going to ring the bell and say last orders are finished and it's time to go.
Fair enough. Always a pleasure, never a chore.
Thanks very much, Paul.
No. Thank you both.
I feel enlightened and depressed. So we've been talking the blues.
It's a rare skill, isn't it, to enlighten
marvellous.
And depress somebody at the same time.
Oh, dear.
Gents, thank you so much. But I think the greatest thanks actually have to go to everybody who listens to us every week and has to put up with the explanations that we have to give based on the ridiculous behaviours of the people who are in charge of our clubs. But there you go.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. All right, we'll talk football next time.
Hopefully.
Have a good winter break.
Will do, guys. Take care.
Cheers.